Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Guess we'll been like this the last couple of days, but maybe we'll call this group therapy session here. Not feeling any better about it. Over the last 2 days, nope, still stings, still hurts. Take a while to come down off of this one. All right. You guys heard my thoughts all weekend here on Twitter, of course. Podcast out there yesterday as well. A lot of you agreeing, of course. I mean, there's not a lot to disagree with out there. But this thing's gone in many directions, of course. You start every time after a loss, there's always a big picture look to go along with it at the same time. And I think that's where a lot of the bad feeling comes from. Year four, still don't necessarily know the direction the program's going right now, and that's where I stand with it right now. Of course, going back when Dan Mullen was hired, I never would have thought we'd be in year four, still wondering where the program is heading, and still conceding the East to Georgia in year four. And look, we're in the first week of October, and we're already conceding the East to Georgia. Partly because of how good they are, and partly because of how Florida's played so far this year. So, didn't think we'd be in this position here, year four of Dan Mullen. So, I think that's where the big picture look starts for me, and kind of still wondering of the direction of the program right now. So, Roberto, man, I'll start with you. We'll get this conversation going. All right. Morning. Hey, how you doing, man?
Feeling like you this morning. Feeling just like you this morning. Hey, I wanted to let you know I listened to your YouTube early this morning, and I've been waiting for you to come on. Everything you said in your YouTube, I felt it. I even commented it on Twitter this morning that the way the program going right now, dude, we're going to end up looking like Nebraska. That killer instinct that we used to have, where is it?
It's not consistent. I'll tell you that much.
It's not. And looking at Dan, when he coming off the field smiling, I would be pissed. I would be pissed. And why? The funny thing though, Dave, let me retract a little bit. While watching the game, I was sitting there probably like everybody else saying, why are we running into Kentucky's strength, which is basically running the ball right at them or from sideline to sideline? Their weakness is their secondary. We're throwing the ball. We catching the ball. But like you said, once again, in your, YouTube channel, we're not pressing the ball down the field. And then when we do, you stop. It made no sense. None whatsoever. And then to go into halftime with three timeouts and you didn't use not one of them. It just baffled the mind of probably every Gator fan on the planet. I mean, like I said, I listened to you this morning, man, and I was like, man, my man, I feel exactly what he was saying. And it got to be some self-evaluations, some long looks in the mirror, not just with the team, but the coaching staff, and even with Scott Strickland. Scott Strickland should pull every last one of the coaches, everybody into the office and say, look, we're paying y'all salaries, and this is the kind of outlook we're going to get. it need to be some fire put up under people, because if you underperform at your job is only going to give you, what, a verbal warning, a written up, and then you terminate it. I mean, I'm not trying to call for Dan's head. I'm not that type of dude. But the performance that was put on the field Saturday, that was way below Gator standard. I'm just being honest.
There you go. I mean, that whole Gator standard, you know, that Dan Mullen comes up or comes into the program with, that's where a lot of people are going to fall back on. Look, I mean, we know the standard. The day he's hired, say Gator standard. I mean, you know, that catchphrase wasn't needed, but it came out there. So, of course, and we know he knows the expectations of Florida fans, and he coming in that way and, you know, hyping that Gator standard. Well, of course, it's going to be turned around and used against. We saw Saturday, and look, I mean, it's not the first time we've seen Florida come out and play that way and not be up for a game. You go back to last year, and look, I mean, of course you go back to 2018 and you losing to Kentucky there, losing to Missouri, and you could say inexcusable games, but okay, you get a pass. It's your one. You get somewhat of a pass, but now, you know, it's still the kind of continuation from the end of 2020 now coming to 2021. And still seeing those type of performances where it doesn't look like Florida's ready in some ways, you know, right or wrong, no way to really measure this. Are they ready to play a game? Once again, are they getting ready? Are they getting up for opponents? You know, that's just a trend we've seen that continues. And for whatever reason, just no killer instinct week in and week out. And it's not you can look at that micro, you can look at that macro. And that's just what it looks like right now. There's not a killer instinct in the program right now. All right.
Hey,
Ryan. So, Ryan, you good? I don't hear you. Doesn't say your mic is muted, does it? Oh, I do not hear you. All right, let me. Ryan, I hear something, but it's not coming through for whatever reason. All right. Kerry, get you in here. Good there, Kerry?
Yeah, good morning, Dave.
Hey, man, good morning.
The Bears Nation is still Gator Nation, man.
Oh, yeah.
But, man, I just want to see how you feel about Dan Mullen just overhauling his philosophy, just totally just changing what he's trying to do. Because if you look at our offense last year with Kyle Trask, we didn't struggle to score points. I don't want to see him go to a pass-heavy offense like he was last year. But if we can't throw the ball, then, you know, we ain't finna line up and beat Georgia with that offense that we running. Like, I just want to see him go out the more athletic pocket passer that can throw the ball, because Emory Jones, it looked like his throwing motion, they got kind of slow, because when he throw the ball, it like he just taking his time to throw. His release ain't fast. I don't know if his release changed or what, but it just looked so slow and missing. And like, we had players running open, and like, I don't know what it is, but I just think we need to just change our philosophy and just go to a more pass friendly offense.
Kerry, I put that out there yesterday, and I'm not going to disagree with you. I put that out there yesterday. I mean, look, since Dan Mullen's come to Florida, and he has run, if you go to the Felipe Franks offense, that's more similar to what we're seeing with Emory Jones. You know, that's the type of offense. And Mark Stoops is, you know, since his time at Kentucky and timing it with Dan Mullen's time at Florida, you go back to 2018. he stifled that offense. You go back to 2019 when Prince, before he gets injured, man, that's what you see. And he stifled that offense before Kyle Trask comes in and saves the day. You go to the pass-heavy approach that you saw with Kyle Trask last year. And look, 2020 was different, of course, but, you know, Kentucky can't even keep up with that style of offense. And then back to the quarterback run style of offense, and Kentucky stifles you once again. There, so Mark Stoops is definitely, while his talent level has raised and timing with Dan Mullen's time at Florida, it has made a difference there for his defense being able to play against that style of offense. And, of course, you look at the type of offenses Kirby Smart has struggled with at Georgia, and you go to last year and Kyle Trask and that offense. You go to the year before, Joe Burrow and that type of offense and that passing attack from LSU against a really good Georgia defense, and that Georgia defense can't keep up. So, yeah, and I will say, you know, you talk about an overhaul in the way maybe – look, recruiting philosophy, yeah, that needs to be overhauled. You know, you want to get better athletes in anyway. But we are seeing the hints that I think Dan Mullen does kind of want to go to that style of offense a little more. You look at a Jalen Kitna, Carlos Del Rio, a Nick Evers. They are more of that athletic pocket style. They're athletic guys. They can run, but you're not going to ask them to run 10, 15 times a game. It's more about, can you escape the pocket when needed? And if we decide to call the zone read option, speed option, you know, run it to keep a defense off balance, but it's not going to be the focus of the offense. Focus of the offense is going to be drop 3, 5, 7 step drop, throw the ball on timing and go with it. So we've seen Dan Mullen have success with it. And we think, you know, I think just by looking at recruiting, you can see maybe him trending that way a little bit. Anthony Richardson may be the best of both worlds, you know, when he gets his chance and ever and get the playbook down, get the offense down, know the part of the offense, and, you know, maybe to excel on both sides of that style. But I think with the quarterbacks Dan Mullen's recruited, you can tell that he wants to have that option of being able to go to that pass. I won't necessarily say pass first, but pass friendly style of offense.
Okay, Dave, I just wanted to, you know, get your thoughts on it, Jesse. But, you know, it's still Gator Nation, though. But, man, 13 points against Kentucky, we shouldn't be good on that. But all right, Dave, thanks.
All right, thanks, man. All right, Ryan, I think you're back in here now. Hopefully Twitter didn't kick you off this time.
Yeah, sorry. How's it going, Dave?
Good, man, good.
Good. I think, and I've been saying it on the timeline all weekend and stuff, and you said it a lot in your recap, but my question is, you know, it doesn't matter who the quarterback is, right? It doesn't matter if it's Emory, it doesn't matter if it's Richardson or whoever. I think, was it the StatCat said we didn't throw one pass over 20 yards?
Yeah.
You know, like, at some point, Dan's got to trust whoever he puts back there, you know, and I don't know why he doesn't. Obviously, we're not at practice or whatnot, but, I mean, that was – a scared game plan. It was called a scared game. Like, there's no reason, if you think Emory is what we all, you know, thought he was going to be, that you don't let him at least go out and try some of this stuff. And, you know, I think people bringing up game reps from the last couple of years and stuff, okay, probably valid to some extent, but at some point you got to just do it. Cause my question is, what happens the rest of the year? You know, mm-hmm. Are you just going to run the ball into the line of scrimmage for the next 8 games and hope it works? You know, well, I know in Jacksonville it's not going to work, yeah. You know, but I know a lot of other places, you know, you're going to be Vandy and some teams like that. But at some point, either you got to trust the guy you put in there, or you got to make a change, or you got to do something different with what you're going to call so that you do trust them. I mean, I don't think it has anything to, well, I mean, we could argue all day why a fourth year starter, you know, or fourth year guy doesn't have the coach's trust, or why the second year guy doesn't have the coach's trust, or whoever. But at some point you got to trust somebody, and you got to have some confidence in what you're doing back there. Otherwise, I mean, one little thing goes wrong and then you're losing these, as you said, unexcusable games to Kentucky.
Yeah, that's the thing, that this offense is going to keep it. Yeah, this is the offense you are going to run, and it's an off day, then you're going to get that one score fourth quarter type of game where you can't make the mistake. And that's exactly what happened Saturday night. I'll ask Dan if nobody else does before me, but I'm going to ask him about the downfield passing attack today when we talk to him in the press conference. It's got to be a mix. We do see there are plays where there are guys open down the field, and the quarterback just won't see it, doesn't trust himself to throw it. I don't know what's going on there. I mean, heck, you come in as a – and look, and I know it's a little maybe a lot different. But, you know, we'll go back to 2018, Emory Jones in his first big game, Florida-Georgia, deep pass down the sideline to Van Jefferson. So, you know, it's not like he's afraid to throw, but you come and get groomed as the quarterback and learning the offense, and it's your chance, and we don't see the same aggression. Now, look, I know that play was probably practice. That's the play he was come in and designed to run. I get that. Being back in 2018, that's more than likely the scenario there. But we also saw earlier in the season, and I know we wanted to see more of it, but you know, earlier in the season, we were seeing him test the ball down the field a little more. And, okay, you had some interceptions and, you know, the pass to Whittemore that gets picked off versus USF. But even versus Bama, you know, you at least tried it, test it, and probably at least to keep the aggression from their defense from catching up a little bit. I mean, you didn't really complete them, but you got the pass interference calls with Copeland when you at least tried to pass the ball down the field. And look, it does at least let the defense know you're willing to try it. And right now, you know, Kentucky probably had no confidence in looking, or you know, could tell Florida had no confidence in going down the field, play right into their hands. You know, they were spying Emory. They were looking to keep him from running, but also in a way daring him to pass the ball. There were times when Kentucky's in zone, they're not picking up, they're not passing their zone off. There's a guy open for Florida down the field. I don't know why Emory either doesn't see it, or he does see it and won't pull the trigger. I don't know the trust in himself right now, I guess, to go down the field either. I think maybe that's part of it as well. But, you know, we'll ask Mullen about it and see if there's what he sees in the downfield passing game and maybe a way to get more of it.
All right. Who else is in here? Tyler Reed. Let me see.
Hey, David, how you doing?
Good. How about you?
Doing good. I guess my only comment is I just want the thumb wrestling Dan Mullen back. I said it on Twitter a couple times, and I just kind of wondered what happened to that guy. You know, after that loss, I think that was season one, bad loss, and, you know, he comes out with some fire in the press conference, and it really gave the fan base, you know, a lot of confidence that this is the right guy. And now it's just like every post-game press conference, there's excuses. You know, the picture of him trotting onto the field with the biggest smile on his face, I just don't get it. I mean, he brought an offense to Gainesville that we hadn't had in a decade, and I guess he's just super comfortable back there. And, you know, it's the little things that I complain about all the time that people call, you know, people get mad about it, you know, even when we win. But those little things add up, and they came back to bite us here. And, you know, he had a chance to get rid of Grantham last year, which I'm not going to blame the game on Grantham. Defense played pretty good. But he's refusing to make the personnel changes, and I'm not sure that he has any incentive to. And I don't know what it's going to take. But, yeah, I just want to thumb wrestle Dan Mullen back. I truly wonder what happened to that guy and why he doesn't have that fire anymore. Or, you know, if he does, why he doesn't show the fan base. And I don't mind losing to Kentucky if you leave it all out on the field. But we just didn't even try to win. We played not to lose. And, you know, even if you throw it deep, if you get a pick, that's fine. You can say, look, we tried. They were the better team tonight. But you might even get a pass interference to extend the drive. We just didn't try at all. And I just really don't get it.
Yeah, a couple things there. I think once he saw the defense was probably going to play pretty well, and then once the offensive line started having their issues, I think he went into a shell. I really do. The aggression wasn't there. I think also probably caught him by surprise a little bit that the run game wasn't going to be as effective as it had been the last couple of weeks. I think that affected a little bit of the play calling, play design, aggressiveness that we saw. I think it was going to be a conservative approach anyway, but like I said on the podcast, don't mind that if you think your run game is going to go take off. And if the run game had been what it had been the last couple of weeks, you know, we wouldn't have complained about trying to run the ball and all that, but it wasn't. You got to adjust, you got a game plan, you got a scheme, and look, that's what he had been doing the last couple of weeks really well anyway. You know, we kind of lauded him for his play calling against Alabama, against Tennessee, and scheming guys open and your misdirection and confusing linebackers along the way. I mean, we just didn't see a whole lot of that. I do think, you know, the offensive line and their performance probably affected Dan Mullen a whole lot and what he wanted to do out there as far as, you know, just being aggressive and maybe changing things along the way. I do agree with you about the whole thumb wrestling and after the Missouri. I think the fan base, you know, you were okay with a loss after that game, but you were like, okay, you got fired up in some kind of way, saying, okay, well, you know, we know this guy's not going to take kindly the losses too much. And then you had the we know post-game press conferences lately aren't Dan Mullen's best friend. You go back to 2020 and everything that happened there. There's no need to rehash everything that happened, but you know, you can put together and go back and look at all that. And, yeah, I mean, it's just hasn't been the best look at times for Mullen in post-game press conferences. And you mentioned the smiling coming off the field and then the comments of about, you know, leading in stats but not really being out-coached. And then, look, you – maybe have to read the room a little bit. You might can think that, but maybe not come out and say it. well, we led in yards and blah, blah, blah. I wouldn't necessarily say I was out-coached. Hey, you lost a game. So, you know, just, yeah, what's the score? Okay, yeah, that's the score. Okay, yeah, okay, I was out-coached. But, you know, maybe read the room a little better. That's got, you know, but that's Mullen. I mean, we know the press post-game press conferences aren't his friend there. But I do think, you know, the fan base sees the whole – thumb wrestling comment 2018. He's ready to go after a loss. He's ready to get better. And like, I don't expect him to come out like that after every loss. You know, as that would fall on deaf ears after a while, and coming out like that. But you know, I think after Saturday, the smile walking onto the sideline, you know, that something like that probably would have appeased the fan base a little bit. But after that kind of loss, I'm not so sure much would have, but yeah, a lot of people do want to see and wonder where that fire is that we saw back in 2018.
Hey, Dave, I just want another question that should be asked in regards is, where are all the alpha males?
Yeah.
Where are all the alpha males on the actual team? When I see they get deflated, they go to the sideline and they just sit there and they look like they're sulking. There's no Brandon Spikes mentality on the sideline. There's no Tim Tebow mentality on the sideline. It's like, okay, we just gonna accept what just happened and we just whatever. There's no alpha males. I've been saying this for a minute now since Jared Davis left. There has not been not one. Now, Ventrell was trying to live up to that aspect. I get it. But after him, where's the rest of them? You got veterans on the offensive line. Why ain't nobody stepping up saying, you know what, look, guys, we're not playing. We're not playing. We need to get this corrected, and we need to get it corrected right now. None of that happened. Garage been playing for a minute now. I even said on Saturday night, I'm hoping and praying that this is the last year. Graduate, go. Because it don't make any sense to me. You got veterans and ain't nobody taking the role as a true leader and saying, look, let's get this crap under wraps because this is not us.
Yeah, I think that I have seen that brought up too, and also regards to the quarterback position as well. You know, that there just seems to be no emotion going through there. And look at that, that's hard to measure sometimes, and hard to measure how much it matters. And you know, if you're not that guy, do you go force it? And, you know, Emory Jones is not doesn't look to be the rah rah type there. And look, a lot of that comes. Okay, if you're, you know, Kyle Trask wasn't necessarily that type of guy either, but you know, you go out there and play well, and you can lead by example in a couple of different ways there. But I've seen that brought up too. And look, leadership was a big question on last year's team. And then you had Zach Carter coming back and Brenton Cox coming back. You had those transfers coming in, and their leadership right away was brought up, you know, in a comparison to Jonathan Grenard back in 2019. You know, and look, but where I'm pointing at is I'm pointing to all the guys on the defense right now. And a lot of your leadership probably comes from that side of the ball. And you know, when you have a game like Saturday night, when your defense is actually playing pretty well, you know, you'd like to see some of that leadership on the offensive side of the ball. You know, Jacob Copeland and Emory Jones, Damian Pierce probably has that role and that responsibility in some form or fashion. Malik Davis, you've been around the program for years as well. But yeah, it is something at least that you can't see physically. Now, of course, we're not on the sideline. We're not, you know, privy to seeing everything that goes on the sideline and everything there. But I do think, you know, especially everything that was happening Saturday night and the false starts and the kind of lackadaisical approach, the question of that can rise. But it's not necessarily an easy answer.
Good morning, Dave.
Hey, Nick.
Greetings from Birmingham, man. My wife and kids wondering why I'm still salty this morning, and they celebrating that Bama victory, but that's getting a little old. Question I got, Dave, well, comment. I was talking in the fall about special teams, you know, because it really worried me. I know you said they work on it and everything, but I had a feeling it was going to bite us in the Bama game, because I said I had a feeling it might come down to the last second, you know, maybe a long field goal or whatever to try to win the game. And it obviously came back to bite us against the Bama and the Kentucky game.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at the game last night, man, I'm looking at it, and that left side, starting with Big Dez, love Big Dez, but, man, that left side got blew up, and Dez, it was like it was no effort with Pascal coming through there, blocking it and taking it back, and, you know, kind of the difference in the ball game.
Yeah, man. I mean, especially in both losses this year, you know, your special teams have shown up, and that's more of a – and I mentioned it on the podcast, one of those attention to detail type of things. That's what special teams are. You know, special teams are a detail aspect of football, and you're not seeing that. Nobody fears anything about Florida special teams. Now, Florida's had great field goal kickers for years upon years.
Yeah.
And, you know, you gave that respect to Florida, but as far as the playmaking ability of special teams, nobody's worried about Florida in that regard.
Nope.
Nobody's worried about a punt return. Nobody's worried about a punt block. Nobody's worried about a kickoff return going the distance there. I know one change a lot of people was mentioned. Okay, I wouldn't mind seeing it. If Lorenzo Lingard and DeMarcus Bowman don't go get touches in the run game, get them involved in special teams some kind of way, somehow. Young guys, Chris Rainey and Jeff Demps, you know, when those guys were young, when those guys were freshmen, you saw those guys on special teams.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it kept them engaged in games. Now, you gave them some carries when they were young guys as well, and they performed in a running game as young guys too. But, you know, at least looking at two other guys maybe in that scenario that are young and don't get a lot of playing time, I mean, that's a way to get those guys engaged. Get you some more speed on the field as well. And, Mullen knows how to coach football. Will forget more football than I'll ever know. But he's conservative in a lot of areas about mm-hmm. football, and a lot of it is, you know, maybe relying way too much on seniority, relying way too much on experience, and sometimes just not going with the physical ability. And I know we talk about that at the quarterback position, but I mean, there's other places too. And I think special teams is one of those. Yeah. And he always talks about young guys. If you want to get on the field, go prove yourself on special teams. Well, okay, where are those guys at? And what opportunity are they getting? So, you've had the missed extra point, the blocked field goal, and both losses this year. You point to that specific part of special teams, but it's all encompassing. And they've punted the ball pretty well this year too, given that too. But I'm talking about, and going to your point too, just the playmaking, the skill players that can make a difference in special teams. You don't see it. You don't even really see it. It looks like the focus isn't there, because ever since he's been here, there's been a lack of aggression in being aggressive on special teams, as maybe punt mm-hmm. blocking and punt returning, kick returning. You don't see it.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing, Dave, you know, we talk about Emory's progression. You know, I'm watching it again, and I'm looking on the interception, and I'm looking at the underneath route, had Malik Davis wide open at least for 10, 12 yards, you know, and he throws it across the middle. I'm wondering if he just he's hesitating because a lot of his throws are late. And my thing about that is, Dan, if he doesn't want to throw the ball deep down the field, well, hey, let's try to – if you want to pound the ball, let's put Let's try to run Lingard and Bowman. Those are your deep play. Those are your threats as far as touching the ball and taking it 80 yards to the house. No disrespect to Davis and Pierce and Naquan, but from all accounts, those are your big play guys right there. Let's give them an opportunity if you want to be a run happy team, because we'll get no explosive plays.
Yeah, I mean, there's a different way to measure explosives, and that was something I brought up big time yesterday. I'll do the baseball analogy one time. You know, you're hitting a lot of doubles and triples in the run game, at least going into last week, but you were still missing that home run.
Yes.
And all throughout the offseason, going back to spring, leading up to the season, I still said, you know, your home run threats probably are Lingard and Bowman. And you're not seeing it there in that run game. And there's a big time, you know, now in that close game when you really could have used it, and there you go, kind of falling back to the whole experience versus maybe skill. I at least thought we would see a package for one of those guys at least try and get them on the edge. Look, I know they probably struggle pass blocking. I completely agree with that. But as you said, if you're going to kind of be predictable and you're going to play that conservative run approach style, okay, well, Kentucky's know you're going to run it anyway, so try and get something creative with those guys. Get them on the edge and just see if they can bust one. But in that close game scenario, Dan Mullen's always going to fall back on experience. He's going to fall back on a conservative approach not to mess things up. And that interception messed things up there, and you talk about that play. And look, Kentucky fooled Emory. He never expected that guy to fall back and trail. Throw was late, throw was low, and easy interception there. Maybe a better throw, and it maybe works out anyway. But Kentucky had that covered all throughout, and credit to them for fooling Emory Jones there and getting that interception. But Florida still got to go back to the drawing board. As good as that run game can be, potentially be, you still got to find, as you said, especially if you're not going to pass the ball down the field, try and find another way to create explosives in the run game.
Yes, absolutely. Well, okay, Dave, I appreciate that, man. Go Gators.
Go Gators.
All right.
Morning, Dave.
Hey, MJ. How you doing, man?
Very good, brother. I feel like I know regret when I see it. And that post-game press conference with Dan, that dude did not want to be there. I kind of feel, and he's already admitted this once, he's kind of thrown wrinkles into the game to get Emory more comfortable, put him in uncomfortable situations. I almost kind of feel he game planned for LSU, Georgia, by like using UK and maybe, I guess, was it Missouri or whoever we play next, to like kind of sort of get him ready to be uncomfortable. So do you think that maybe he looked past this game and this is what bit him?
Not from what I heard. I mean, I heard they were really, I mean, it may be on defense, but this maybe spoke more to the defense, but I heard it was a really physical week in practice, knowing that what Kentucky was going to bring to the table. No, I don't think he overlooked this one. I just think it was a conservative game plan, changed even more conservative probably once the offensive line showed that they were going to be lost throughout the whole game. They couldn't fire off the ball. The snap count, the clapping, no silent count, no adjustment there. First it falls on the head coach, offensive line coach, for not trying to come up with something. Looking at it, though, if you didn't practice it during the week, it probably going to be hard to implement something, but you can also go back on that and say, hey, you're going on the road. Yeah. And this is not your, I mean, you've coached football you've been a head coach for, you know, a decade now, Dan Mullen, over a decade. And you cannot have an adjustment to when you were struggling there on the offensive line. So no, I don't think he was overlooking Kentucky. And that's maybe, in either way, it's not an excuse. If you were overlooking them and you lost, okay, well, that's your fault. And how the game actually played out is your fault. It starts at the top as well. No, I don't think he was overlooking Kentucky. I don't think it was that team undefeated coming in. That's a game you needed to win. The team capable of beating you if you don't play your best, and that's exactly what happened. So I don't think it was one of those. You know, when Mullen said last week, "Yeah, we'll put Emory in some uncomfortable situations, see how he reacts." I don't think it was that. I think, you know, Mullen just went in there with a conservative approach that got even more conservative as the game played along, and that was your result.
Oof. All right. I'll take it. So, I mean, I'm left without words just because I was just as stunned as everybody else, but I also kind of saw it was possible. So, I don't know. I mean, if anything could happen, I guess, for a season to end, Bob, what do you think would need to occur?
Now, look, that's a good point. I said plenty of times before this season, look, I didn't think Florida was winning the East. I didn't think, you know, I thought I was going to pick Georgia there. Now, look, we got our hopes up a little bit after that Alabama performance, and rightfully so. You should have. But then, you know, we get the inconsistent Dan Mullen here this past week's game. What needs to happen, of course, you have to win the games you're supposed to win from here on out. You can't have another one of those performances that we saw this past Saturday. But look, my ultimate goal in saying if Florida's not going to win the SEC East, which I didn't think they did, I need to feel great about 2022 at the end of the season. And that's still the goal for me. By the time this season ends, I need to feel good about going into next year. And that's going to be remain to be seen. Of course, I think, and I tweeted it yesterday. And look, no matter what Florida was doing this year, anyway, we know the issues behind the scenes in the recruiting and the lack of support in recruiting from the admin and spending money in that regard. That's got to get better, and that's not fully on Mullen there. But you know, he's got to take care of his part of that, and the admin and the university's got to take care of their part of that. That's got to come together as well. You know, some staff changes to help in recruiting, but also we always fall back on John Hevesy and the offensive line, which had been playing well up to this point there. But you know, what staff changes can you make? Defensive coordinator comes to mind as well. But you know, things aren't fine. You know, there is going to have to be an overhaul in some form or fashion behind the scenes. And we knew that no matter the success Florida was going to have this year, you know, there are some things that need to change. But part of feeling better about 2022 is what happens on the field in 2021. And what's going to change, what's going to be different moving ahead to 2022.
Yeah, that's great. Bill Bormer-Terrell, I'll keep that. So I'll leave the floor open, but thanks again, Dave.
Thanks, man.
Morning, Dave.
Hey, Manny.
How you doing, my man?
I'm doing well. Some group therapy the last couple of days.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, it's just those things, right, that you want to move forward, right? Obviously, it's not the result you wanted. But at some point, you got to realize, man, like, once again, here came an opportunity where you know what you had to do after you actually put up a fight against the number one team in the country, defending champions in the second half. You came back. Last week, first half, slow start. Second week, came back, total domination. To me, Dave, this game felt like you lost. Well, my apologies. My damn dog is getting excited over here. To me, the game was lost on Wednesday, man, right? If this is your game plan, if this is what you prepped all week for, you know what I mean? It just feels like it was lost from the get-go. And, you know, Anthony Richardson, we haven't seen him for 2 weeks. Gets one snap in the second half. And then Emory Jones, once again, he's throwing the ball late like he did against USF. It's just those things. It just feels like it was a bad loss at the wrong time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and Manny, you brought up the Bama game. Look, and going into the season, we expected that loss somewhat. And then you knew there was a thin margin of error. Moving forward, because you knew the Bama game was likely going to be a loss. Because then you knew you had to turn it on for the rest of the season, going up to the Georgia game. You couldn't have that loss versus Kentucky. You couldn't have that loss to Missouri if you wanted any chance of going to win the SEC East and taking it to Georgia and Jacksonville. So now, I mean, you're already two losses first week of October. It would take a miracle for Florida to be in Atlanta. You didn't want to be in that position moving forward and going into Jacksonville. You wanted that game to be the determining factor of who was going to go represent the SEC East in Atlanta, and that's not happening. But you knew the margin of error was going to be very, very slim when you have Alabama on the schedule. It was one reason that we were all picking Florida in 2020. Look, we thought Florida was better than Georgia anyway in 2020, but Georgia also had Alabama. And so you knew you had some pad. You knew you had some cushion. Well, Georgia, you turn it around. That's exactly the scenario we had in 2021 as well. But you just flip it around. Florida had Alabama. Georgia had the easier schedule. And you were going to more than likely lose that game, but you were going to have to rebound and go get the win in Jacksonville and go on to have a successful season. And that's pretty much out of the window right now, partly because two losses. Florida isn't as good as we thought. And, you know, Georgia's a really, really, really good football team right now. One of the country, and no question, one of the country's best two teams. Alabama and Georgia separated themselves this past 2 weeks. So it's going to take a miracle anyway based on your record, but also to go in Jacksonville and get a win versus Georgia. And then for them to go along somewhere else this season and lose another game. It's not going to happen. So and if it does, we can all remember this, and I'll look like an idiot in a few weeks. But right now, you look at what realistically will happen and what we realistically thought going into this season, you could not have this type of slip up. So, you know, the prep, you know, this team wasn't prepared. I mean, I don't care how good practice was or what was told or how we were told good practice was this week. It didn't translate. It did not translate whatsoever. Didn't look prepared in one of the game's most important aspects and penalties. When you go on the road, have to take on a tough team, you've got to play good. You know, and we know the tough competition that's been in Lexington lately when you go and play that team, and they were going to be ready. Look, I expected a close game and Florida to pull away in the fourth quarter with a late score a little bit. And so I respected Kentucky a good bit. I thought it was going to be a tough game, but you can't lose in that fashion. And look, I mean, I can ask you guys a question, and you know, maybe something we would speak on. Would you feel better if it was a 30-20 loss to Kentucky? You know, would you had rather it look like a game we maybe expected, where Todd Grantham can't get a stop, and that the Kentucky offense just runs roughshod over you? You know, or you know how it played out. Either way, it's a loss. It doesn't really matter, but it just. The way it played out, the approach, the look of lack of preparedness, it doesn't sit well. It doesn't sit well with where you knew that the margin of error for this year was, and building upon what you did last week or a couple weeks ago versus Alabama. You can't have that kind of performance going out there versus Kentucky.
Hey, Dave.
Hey, man.
Hey, yeah. I got here's my take on the game, man. Me looking at the game, I feel like Dan could have been a little bit more aggressive? I do. But overall, when I watched, I missed the game Saturday and I got a chance to watch it Sunday. Okay. And from what I saw, we missed a lot of opportunities. That was like, I'm gonna put the blame on both the players, and we probably say Dan as well. But I really gotta put it on their execution. If you think about a lot of those false starts, those were on first downs. Like, we got first downs and got false starts. Like, a lot of stuff got halted based on those false starts. Even that field goal drive, we got a first down on that fourth down drive, and then it was a false start. I don't know what we could do as far as like with crowd. I don't know the coaching scheme or what you do in practice to prevent against a crowd. But that's what I feel like. That was one of the main issues. The scheme, when I watch it, you know, looking at the scheme, you know, I feel like he was conservative, but I do feel like Emory missed a lot of plays as well. Because even though we were being conservative, we were moving the ball. So, you know, I know a lot of people were saying like they didn't like the draws we was doing, but you're getting 5-6 yards on the run. That's what you want when you run the ball. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, outside of those, you take those, you know, you take those penalties away, we probably get a lot more points than what really showed about that. Them penalties really is what really killed us out there. When you think about I'm thinking about like one of the guys mentioned about Emory on the interception. Like you say, he looked to the other side. He had Malik and he had Wells pretty much like almost on a high-low situation. Well, if he just looked to the side, he could have hit Malik. And really, the linebacker was about to drop on Malik and he could have hit Wells, and that probably would have been a touchdown. The next drive, he gets flushed out. It might have been that, the next drive, he gets flushed out on the wheel route where somebody – when he gets flushed out, the wheel route was wide open for a TD. Even on the last drive, we still could have scored. Copeland knee hits the ground. And then we get that took away. And then what happens? Two back-to-back false starts. Mm-hmm. Then not only that, we still had a chance to score. I don't know what they see out there. You know, it's easy for us to see from the TV stand. So I don't know part of it's like how it looks at Emory's helmet. But like you say, Gamble goes right. I think that was Gamble. He crawls right across his face wide open for a TD. And he throws that over there to Whitmore. You know, so it's like,
Yeah, he had decided where he was going with that ball.
Yeah,
before it even snapped.
It's one of the things. It's just like I'd be wanting, you know, I'd be wanting to point at my coach sometimes, and then sometimes I look at the game. I'm looking at it, I'm just like,
Yeah, that's the type of things that's going to happen in a game like that. You're gonna end up pointing to both sides. That's a consistency issue. You know, you'll go and look. I mean, ultimately, it does fall on coaching, of course. You know, that's your guy. You know, when you have what 15 penalties, for 115 yards and the 8 false starts, 6 of those were on 3rd or 4th down, kind of going to your point there. You know, so they came at exactly the wrong time. I mean, look, there's not a good time for it, but 3rd and 4th down, you know, that's you can't have that happen. But, you know, so you have to make an adjustment there along the way. But like you said, there were still the chances. You still had a chance at the end of the game to make a play and win. You had two drives at the end of the game where you didn't score a touchdown one time, settle for a field goal the first time. I think, well, on that drive, you were going to go for it on 4th and 1, but you had the penalty, so you end up kicking the field goal. And then no really shot in the end zone on those last 8 plays of the game. It's a combination, man. That's what makes it so frustrating.
I'm gonna make you laugh, man, about the personnel. I just feel like this is the last year. Once this year, I feel like all our explosive players gonna fall in place. Like I'm looking at the roster, I'm like, please. I was like, you know, I like Emery, but you know, I'm gonna ride with him. I'm still gonna roll with him until the season. You know, because you know we already know how Mullen is. He'll let him bring the ship down before he changed the captain. He'll let him sink the ship fully. So, with the players that we got, you know, that's one of the things I do hate about Dan parts that with that seniority. But I, you know, I'm like, man, we could just get through this season. Hopefully, we can win. Well, you know, hopefully we can win that, which included being Georgia. But yeah. You know, that would be the best scenario. I think all of us want to happen.
I'll go to your point there, man. Before you wrap up, I mean, a lot of people are already asking. It's the first week of the season, the first week of October of the season. So what are you playing for? So the whole seniority thing, the whole playing more experience thing. Why now? You know, why should that be the plan from here on out? And a lot of people are already considering a lost season because you're not. You know, we're going to win the SEC East more than likely. So you have Vanderbilt, you have LSU, a bye week, Georgia. You know, do you make the change at quarterback to see what you have there, to get him ready, to get the experience? Yeah, more than likely, I still think you play both right now. And he's not going to start Anthony Richardson. We know that. And, you know, I think part of my, you know, what should happen, what is he going to do? I'm kind of always fall back on what I think the coaches will do. That plays into my decision, plays into my thoughts a little bit. And as you said, we kind of know what Mullen's MO is. But I think there's no question you have to get AR more game reps. You're probably rolling with Emery as a starter. But I do think right now you should start seeing more split reps. You should start seeing getting some younger guys on the field, working them in. And we'll probably see it this week versus Vanderbilt anyway. Who knows how it will play out versus LSU in a couple weeks when it is a more serious game, a game that you can lose more so in fashion than versus Vanderbilt this week. So I wouldn't take whatever we see versus Vanderbilt this week as a inclination. He's going to change. He's going to play more young guys. No, that's going to play out because Vanderbilt's sorry anyway, and you know you're going to go play some young guys. So you know I don't think we'll really get a feel for what Dan Mullen would change, what he would do till Florida travels to Baton Rouge in a couple of weeks.
Listen, this is my closing. I hope every senior, junior redshirt that's supposed to leave, that we have a young guy back there that got some good potential. I hope that senior leaves. So that means I need Emery to go. I need Davis all to please get on out of here. I love y'all. You know, it's been real. Y'all gave us some good years. But I got to see Bowman in them now. I want to see Bowman, Wright, and Lingard with AR. I want to see that right there.
hopefully we'll get the preview of that this weekend.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for hopping in, man.
Hey, Dave.
Hey, Rob.
So, going back to what someone said earlier about the lack of juices flowing, you know.
Yeah.
I'm looking at our offensive line week to week, and I just see our right side being blown up. And, you know, there's adjustments that are being made and everything. And I see that, you know, a quarterback, you know, we're still doing conservative game plan, like you said. I just want to know, like, how does this affect the recruits and the guys that are under, you know, the starters that are not, you know, playing up to the standard? You know, we're keeping them for seniority, you know, starting. You know, how does that affect us going forward? You know, I mean, I just thank God that Anthony Richardson, you know, loves Florida because, you know, he's doing great things when he gets on the field, you know. And I'm not saying, you know, he's going to come on and, you know, go crazy, you know, and all that, you know, if they gave him a starting role. But all I'm saying is, you know, it just looks different, you know. Players look juiced up. They're getting through the routes, you know. You know, it just looks completely different. So I just wonder if we don't make that change, you know, what does that look like? Do we just go down the road, you know, and lose, you know, four more potentially? That we shouldn't. I hope not. But, you know, what does that look like, you know?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, a lot of people do want to see, quote-unquote, a youth movement for that reason. You know, show that young show young players that they can get playing time at Florida. But that's not necessarily been the way Mullen has done things. And, you know, maybe that speaks to recruiting in a way, saying, okay, well, you come here, I'm going to give you every chance to go prove yourself before I pull you off the field. Maybe that speaks in some positive form or fashion as well. So, yeah, but that's on the staff. That's on the recruiting staff to go out there and sell on the trail, which we know they're not great slash elite at doing so. And you've been able to rely on the transfer portal to make up for that in some form or fashion. But as far as looking at recruits and, you know, them seeing if they can come in and play early, that is it's a legit worry. I think it does play into it a little bit on the recruiting trail. I think it's probably used against Mullen a little bit because, I mean, think about it. Since he's been here now, a lot of it's been because you've had some really good receivers and some good running backs and a style of offense that didn't necessarily lend itself to running the ball the last couple of years. But you've had a lot of veteran guys, but it's still you haven't seen that true freshman come in and make an impact right away. That was something Urban Meyer was able to do, and it was okay. I hate falling back on that, of course. It's not a great comparison. It's not going to happen. We know that. That's one of the best to ever do it in college football. One of the best to ever do it at Florida, of course. But you know, it doesn't seem to be in Mullen's playbook to get young guys involved hardly at all. Now, he'll get them on the field, but those guys don't contribute at a high level. And like I said, at wide receiver the last few years, you can understand that. I mean, you couldn't ask for more for Van Jefferson, Freddie Swain, Tyree Cleveland, and Hammond and Pitts and Tony and Grimes. I mean, you played the right guys in that situation. So I'm not sitting here and saying that you go out there and play freshman just because you got to go make a point to young guys. I mean, you do what you had to do to win games in that regard. But you know, you just haven't had that impact freshman that they could really go point at and say, hey, this could be you.
Right. I guess last question I have is, I guess someone said earlier about like the dogs on the defense. You know, the last one. You know, that came from that group was Ventrell. You know, obviously he got hurt, sad news, but like what he said, like, where are they? You know what I mean? Like, I see guys and I'm looking at our players all across the field, you know, just per, you know, their facial expression, body movement, and it's like, you know, one overpass, you know, if Emery, you know, overpasses it or, you know, he doesn't get it off or something, you know, you just see guys, they're just like first quarter, 3 minutes in, they're just like, you know, walking around with their head down. And I just don't understand it. You know, is there something going on we aren't seeing? You know, I just, you know, these guys on the, you know them for social media and everything. You know, these guys don't play like that. So what do you know? What is going on? I don't understand. Some juice is flowing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, we want to see that when the team's struggling, of course, and seeing like there's some passion and fire. And really, like I said, that's something that's very hard to measure. You know, it's something you can see, but not necessarily how effective is it positively or negatively? I don't know. I think we can see it. I think we definitely want to see that kind of fire. But you know, how much of a difference it actually makes and how much are we actually seeing? That's kind of hard to go by, but we'd like to see it. Of course.
Yeah, man, we need some dogs.
Yeah. Everybody compares, you know, the whole, you know, Tebow and the clapping and the firing up the fan base and all that kind of stuff. But you know, just doesn't, that doesn't seem to be the personality of this team in that regard.
Right. Thank you.
Thanks, man. All right.
Hey, Dave. I just wanted to speak on the EJ and Mullen type situation.
Yeah,
for sure. I think Mullen's getting kind of a bad rap for the conservative play calling because I think he just doesn't trust EJ. I mean, look at his yards per, you know, pass per throw. Like, it's 6.4, and his average, rush is 6.3. Like, you can literally run him as much as he's throwing, and I think Mullen's done a very good job of, like, you know, masking EJ's, you know, kind of not great ability to throw down the field. And the kind of thing that happened with Kentucky was we couldn't run the ball as much as we have been. Like, yeah. Look at our rushing, look at our rushing yards, the first four games or whatever.
Right, like, yeah, I said that earlier. It is a slippery slope to call it conservative when you've been running the ball like you have been. I mean, it can look conservative on the surface, but you know who's going to blame Dan Mullen for trying to go out there and run the ball with the way this team has been running? But I get your point too with Mullen and the play calling because some of the deep balls are there, and as I said earlier, Emery's not pulling the trigger on them. You do have guys open down the field, and Emery's not pulling the trigger or not seeing them. So it's not the fully on Mullen for the conservative approach altogether. I do feel you on that.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, I feel like what Mullen's doing a fantastic job, like, scripting plays for EJ, because he absolutely knows what EJ can do, and like what he's scripting is, dump offs and like under 15 yards, first read options, he's allowing EJ to just like throw like, under 10 yards, under 15 yards. And like, that's what he wants to do. And whenever EJ has to like, work through the progressions and stuff like that, it's not working out. And I feel like Mullen's like feeling that kind of heat. And
yeah, I get you there, and Gator Ryan, he's still in here. He and I have kind of talked about that too. It's just, okay, then why is your fourth year quarterback not ready for that? Then that's probably the bigger question and bigger picture question. You got a fourth year quarterback not going through his progressions, not throwing the ball down the field, and we laud Dan Mullen for quarterback development and all that. And right now, you're having to be conservative because your quarterback's not testing the ball down the field, and you're running the ball well, of course. You can fall back on that. So I think the next thing for this offense is to figure out what you can do when the run game's not there. You can be caught by surprise a little bit, I guess, because they have been working so well. So now it's just about adjustments and building on taking learning lessons throughout the season. All right, well, you learned a lesson Saturday night. Your run game wasn't where it needed to be. You had to overcome some penalties. So, what can you do now to when the going gets tough? You got a whole Saturday night worth of game film there to figure out, okay, what can you do now to still try and get something out of the offense? And as I said, that's one reason I know Anthony Richardson wasn't the explosive player we saw the first couple of weeks. You maybe even could call that a little tentative as well. But maybe that's where you just give him a little more snaps in the second half to see if he can bust one of those big plays. The potential's there. He's about the only player who's shown it this year where he can score from 80 yards away. And I know this isn't USF, and I know it's not FAU, but you have a baseline to go by. You have something to go by that's saying that at least that potential is there. So maybe that's the change. And as I say, maybe get some of the younger guys on the field that have that home run ability, an Anthony Richardson, a Lingard, a Bowman. Maybe that's the change you see. If the run game's not working, you still got to go find a way to get that explosive play.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of how I feel. Like, with AR, it's – a different story. Like, he barely even got a chance. Like, they'd throw him in for like one, two plays, and then they literally do like quarterback draw that was kind of like delayed, like it was bad. Like, and people were like, oh, AR didn't look good. It's like he didn't even get a chance, really.
Yeah, it was a little clunky there.
Yeah, for sure. And it's especially with like EJ, like you can just tell his downfield perception is not good. I mean, like, as you said, like with the Kentucky guy, like trailing, like he literally stared that guy down the entire way. And then look at the Whittemore, like on the fourth and goal, like he should have had that touchdown. Like if he put a little touch on that pass, that's a touchdown almost 9 out of 10 times. Like Trask would have definitely had that. Like,
yeah, and I think you can throw it to the back of the end zone with a little bit of touch to gamble as well on that same exact
He was
play.
Wide. Like, the whole back of that end zone was wide. Like, the whole back of that end zone was wide. And he just decided to throw it on a rope for no reason. Like, I literally jumped up and was like, that's overtime right there. But thank you.
Thanks, man. All right, a few more of you getting in here, and then I'll call it a wrap. What's up, Eddie? You there? It says your speaker's on, but I don't see you. You may have to hop back in. What's up, Crunch Time?
Dave, how's it going, brother?
Doing good, doing good.
You know what? I usually ask from an injury standpoint how the team came out, but just from what I'm hearing, especially from the fan base, how does the team sound after that loss to Kentucky? Is it where we're going to see – here's what I don't want to see for Florida fans. I don't want to see what we saw from LSU last year where that team just went into the tank and never came out. So just from a gauge standpoint, does this team look like they're going to be on solid foot into where they're going to finish out the season, or is it just in complete shutdown mode?
Hard to tell right now. I mean, you can really only go by what they say in post game, and all we heard from was Emory Jones and Zachary Carter, and seemed okay. I mean, they're saying the right things. We'll see how they put it together on the practice field this week. And you know, it's probably a good thing you got Vanderbilt this week. You know, you go and go play. I mean, just go play, and you know, this was going to linger in the fan base for a little while. You know, Vanderbilt's not going to get anybody excited or anything like that. So the talk is going to stay out there. But you know, that's up on the, you know, how much belief they have in this coaching staff, how much they trust this coaching staff, how much they want to play for this coaching staff, how much they want to play for each other. I mean, you had some guys coming back. You had Pierce and Davis and Zachary Carter and guys that have been around the program for years now. It's up on those guys to get this team ready, motivated, and go finish out the season. Look, you never know what can happen. You've got to keep that in mind as well. I know the big goals are very, very, very slim for Florida this year. At least the ultimate goal is. But you know, the chances of that were slim to begin with. Right. But you never know what can happen in the SEC right now. You got to at least keep that open, that door, you know, cracked a little bit. But you're right. I mean, we don't know, honestly. We'll get to talk to Mullen and the players today. Honestly, I could care less what they say. It's more about what you go do on Saturday. You know, especially this week in practice, preparing for Saturday. And, you know, you basically get 2 weeks to prepare for LSU. You know, you can go out there and run the ball 60 times against Vanderbilt Saturday, and that'd be enough to walk out of there with a victory, no matter how well you're ready to play or whatever. That's just kind of the status of this game. So it is all about responding, and you know, to me, just kind of tough to forecast what it means on that part of it.
And I'll say this, and before I get out of here, fantastic job this week, Dave, with all the interviews and everything getting ready for this game. The LSU game will say a lot about where this program is, because as bad as Florida fans feel about where their team is right now, trust me, what's going on in Baton Rouge is 1,000 times worse.
and it's another road game for Florida. So whatever you had as all the problems this past Saturday night in Kentucky, well, you know, you got 2 weeks to get that fixed.
Absolutely.
There's absolutely no reason. And we'll be able to tell a lot about that team. If they come out and it looks any kind of similar to all the false starts and all that kind of stuff there next to the end, then you got a bigger problem. So we'll see where it is in that regard. But you basically got 2 weeks to get ready for Baton Rouge Saturday. And that's getting ready for the LSU team just in general, and getting ready for another and getting ready for another road environment where you can't have the performance that you had this past Saturday.
Absolutely. Good luck to your Gators this coming up week.
Thanks, man.
Hey, Dave.
Hey, Nick.
Hey, one other thing. You know, I was sitting here thinking, man, about the Emory and AR situation. You know, it was similar to Auburn over there with Bo Nix and Joey Gatewood. Gus would not play Gatewood, you know, and Bo Nix was doing horrible that his first year. Wasn't doing great. But the thing about it was, if he played Gatewood, then he was going to have to field a lot of questions if Gatewood would have came out there and played well. Same thing with Felipe and Trask. If Felipe wouldn't have got hurt, we probably wouldn't have won the game in Kentucky and wouldn't have knew nothing about Trask. And then Dan's been fielding questions this year about AR and EJ. I think Dan's just so arrogant and stubborn that he's going to try to prove everybody wrong. So I don't think AR is going to get the start this year. Or, you know, it's just going to have a bad look on Mullen if AR comes in there and start lighting it up.
Yeah, well, hey, I'm going to tell you, part of that's on Mullen. I mean, going into when we finally got media sessions, you know, a month before the season, and almost every week we would either just be talking about Emory or just in general. And Dan Mullen would bring up AR by himself. And
yeah.
A lot of the AR and how he was playing and all that. So some of that he brought on himself by bringing up Richardson and how he was playing all throughout fall camp. And I'm not blaming Mullen for that. I mean, I'm glad he did and said, you know, okay, here's what we have. Here's another quarterback who's playing well. But I'm just saying a lot of it's brought on because of Mullen preseason and how he was talking about the quarterback position as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess my question to you would be also, Dave, what do you think the mentality is with some of these younger kids that's not getting to play now and knowing that, you know, you've lost two games now and you're not getting in and you're feeling you can make a difference? What do you think their mindset is, you know, after that Kentucky's loss?
I mean, I hope. Either way, I want young guys to feel like that they can go out there and make a difference. Now, I don't want it to become a locker room problem or anything and force yeah. issues and all that kind of stuff. But if you're a young guy, I hope you feel like you can go out there and make a difference. That's what I'd want. I know Lorenzo Lingard's frustrated. I've had some people reach out to me. And I mean, I know it's been on social media a little bit too. He deleted some posts, but there's been a little more behind the scenes of him just wanting to play. And it's not a locker room problem or anything like that. It's just he's voicing some frustration of not being able to play. And I completely get it. Absolutely. I mean, I'm a five-star running back, and I transferred here. Thought I'd be able to play. I get it. I absolutely get it. And maybe Vanderbilt this week is a way for those guys to get some playing time. Now, look, you could have asked me before the season, and I never would have thought you played three SEC games and Lingard or Bowman don't have a carry. I never would have saw that coming. Never would have predicted it. And most of it, you would overlook because the run game was working. It was like, well, okay, well, you see what's working. You see what's happening. Okay. But now as we see the offense be somewhat limited in the run game versus Kentucky the other night, okay, oh, well, maybe you need that home run type of ball. And these are the guys that might – we don't know for sure if they can bring it to the table or not. And we're not at practice and seeing what these coaches see. And I know we can always fall back on that. We don't get to see and know everything, but you know, yeah, you'd like to see some work in there of trying to get an explosive when the offense is, you know, just trying to have to put play after play after play after play together to get a score.
Yeah, absolutely, Dave. And like you said, like you mentioned many times before, hey, if it's a problem with them not knowing offense or pass protection or whatever, like you said, you got to at least have a package for them, you know, to at least get a few touches.
Yeah, and especially because, look, there's not a lot of film on those guys. So it's not like right now you're giving away what they can do. I mean, if you put one out there right now in a package, how are you going to defend it? There's not enough tape out there to know if DeMarcus Bowman can't pass block. There's not enough tape out there to know if Lorenzo Lingard can't pass block. Mm-hmm. You could at least surprise in that way right now until those guys are out there, put enough on tape, and you know their tendencies. But that's the advantage you have right now by not, you know, by those guys not playing. But when, you know, or if, is it going to happen?
Yeah, gotcha. Okay then, Dave, I appreciate that.
Now, Eddie, you back in here? Let's see if your mic works now.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Got you good.
Awesome. Hey, thanks for the Vine. I really appreciate it. First, I wanted to bring to the conversation, no one's mentioned it yet. I thought Mark Stoops did an amazing job lobbying for calls. I don't know. did you guys see the difference in the officiating after he thought they missed on that you know, I guess that pass interference. Right away, they called a phantom block in the back on Valentino. I couldn't believe it. I literally rewinded it, and he's hitting him right in the front of the jersey. But that ended up costing us right there. I mean, we would have been right there first and goal. And that was that was all on Mark Stoops. I was like, is he about to get tossed out of the game? I mean, he got so violent with the officiating that they felt the need to make up the call, and they made it up right when we would have been right at the end zone. And that really crushed us. And again, that played into the somewhat conservative play call with, you know, with time, you know, time ending in the first half. If that happens that way and they are not making up that call, then the conservative play game plan probably is working, because we score that touchdown. We go up 10 points on the interception. And then that happens. And then right after that, they called a phantom hold.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, they're crushing us right now. And I kept saying, Mark Stoops, man, he lobbied for it and they listened to him. And my whole thing was, man, I wish we would have been fired up about those crappy calls, because that really cost us in the third quarter. I was like, my gosh, they're literally making it so. There were seven calls. I'd say about three of them were not even questionable. They were outright just lies. I was like, that is the go back and look at the Valentino block in the back. It'll shock you. You'd be like, I can't believe he called that, you know, that way. But I just wanted to bring that to the conversation. I believe everyone has the right to express themselves, you know. So, you know, we're Gator Nation. We expect to win. We expect to win in, you know, very stylish fashion. And, you know, everybody's heartbroken. But, you know, hopefully we rally behind our guys this Saturday. And, you know, there's a lot of season left, too. I mean, you know, we lost more than two games last year. But you know, there's a lot of season left, a lot of opportunity to turn this thing around. And from what I saw in the Alabama game, even though it was a loss, I feel like we have the horses to actually win. We definitely, hopefully this inspires people to get more fired up and, you know, guys take ownership of the rest of the year. And you never know, let's play it out. I'm not about cashing in the season at all. Maybe it's because I let up a lot of home runs in my baseball days when I was a pitcher at Florida. But, you know, you got to pick yourself up and get after it again. But I appreciate the vine for sure.
Thanks, Eddie. Yeah, there was definitely a difference in the referees and the calls after Stoops got on them. Most of the calls you couldn't argue because of the false starts. You saw those. But the questionable calls, the upper interpretation type of calls were certainly there from the officials, and especially Florida getting a lot more called on them after that. I thought, you know, speaking of penalties there and the false starts there, I thought Florida got away with a lot of them toward the beginning of the game. I was, you know, we were talking in the Discord, Gators Breakdown Plus Discord chat room, and I was like, okay, well, DeLance probably could have been called for two or three false starts before they really started calling them on Florida, so I thought Florida was getting away with them there. Look, the refs missed that targeting call in Kentucky as well. That was, to me, I don't know how much more of a definition you need of targeting there in the first half of that game. And I know Stoops was all ticked off about the pass interference calls, and that's when he got on the rim. So I was like, well, you probably forget you got away with the targeting call there in the first half of that game as well. It maybe ended up all working out in some form or fashion there, especially the ones where you can't argue in Florida there. But there was certainly a difference once Mark Stoops went after the officials. All right, I'm trying to get a couple more in here before we go. Let's see. All right. Bull Gator and – yep, you're in here, man. And Prez.
Hey, Dave, I had a question, man.
Yeah, man.
What do you think the likely scenario is if we win out that we are sitting somewhere and, like, rank five to kind of make the playoffs, even though we don't go to the SEC championship? Because I've seen a lot of posts saying, you know, win out, make the playoffs. And I don't know if you went over this already, but what are the chances you think that happens if we win out?
Yeah, we'll talk the if right there. If, I mean, okay, where you're counting a big win over Georgia in that if you win out. So I can certainly speak to you know, the committee there at the end. You'll see what Kentucky does the rest of the season. That will probably come into play right, as well in some regard. Look, it's a weird college football season right now besides Alabama and Georgia. You know, those two teams have separated themselves Oregon goes down. Ohio State already has a loss. You know, a lot of the teams that you were looking at or have looked at in years past, Clemson's not going to be there. Right. Any chance with two? I mean, maybe there's a crack in the door right there with just the way and the wackiness of this college football season. You have to think number of SEC teams come into play if Alabama and Georgia are playing for the SEC championship game. And however the rest of the season plays out, how many spots are Alabama and Georgia potentially taking? And then I doubt you'd be a third SEC team in that regard.
Right.
So you'd probably have to beat Georgia and hope they have another loss along the way for two losses. But if we beat
Georgia, but Georgia makes the title game and lose to Alabama, that gives them two losses right there.
Yeah, right. That would have to be that was exactly where I was going to go next. That would have to be how it would play out, because you couldn't have them, their only loss to Florida, get to the SEC championship game and then beating Alabama, because then that would take Florida out of it. You know, then you give the playoff to Alabama and Georgia in that regard. So that's your path. As difficult as it sounds.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of feel like I saw those tweets, but I'm like, nah, that ain't there's no way that's gonna happen. But yeah, that's all I want to ask. Appreciate your time, Dave. Go Gators.
Go Gators, man. Hey, Bull Gator.
Hey, Dave. Well, you know, not to me to jump on the bandwagon of bashing our coach, but I want to stick up for Emory Jones, who's a guy that I have not been too high on. But if you go back and look at his stats, especially in the first half, he played pretty well.
I was ticked off at the end of the first half. He was. I know the downfield passing wasn't there, but he was playing it safe, and you know there were some intermediate throws there where I at least thought you could have got in the field goal range.
10 out of 11, you know.
Yeah,
you can't ask for much. Where he was, even if you took at some of the bad plays, head and shoulders better than the Kentucky quarterback. It wasn't close,
right?
But as they say, the quarterback is the most important player on the offense because he touches the ball every play. He's not the only player on the offense that touches the ball every play. The center does, and I don't want to jump on Kingsley.
I know.
But after the second or third false start, something needed to be done.
Yes.
I mean, either go to a silent count, change the cadence, which I don't know if you noticed, but the cadence was the exact same throughout the game. Hut,
yeah.
Clap, clap. How he couldn't get that was beyond me. I know
we wondered how this team would react on the road, and there were some young players who hadn't played on the road yet. Kingsley was one of them. I don't think that's a full excuse, but
isn't that up to the coaches, either Mullen or Hevesy, to say something's got to change? We got to pull him out because he's obviously freaking out in this hostile environment, or we got to change the snap count. We got to do something, and they never did. Yeah, and that's why I don't really want to jump on Kingsley. That's on the coaches.
It is. And going to that point, I think we've seen Florida come up with some depth along the offensive line, and maybe just to even settling down, take him out, move Ethan over to center. I mean, White didn't have a good game either when you go and look at it. But you know, maybe move him to center, see if he can get it calmed down, even to at least taking Kingsley out for a drive to calm him down, get some things figured out. Along the way, but yeah, maybe just a shuffling for at least a drive to settle him down, figure out what's going wrong. But you know, you've proven there's some depth there this year, so I think you could have at least tried it. I know this is all hindsight, but you're right. I think once you saw that problem at center, it really, like I said, I think it affected the whole offense. I don't think the offensive line felt comfortable all night long. I think it affected their firing off the ball. Making their assignments. Like I said, I thought Ethan probably had his worst game as well. And I think it all just kind of came in to really just messing up that snap count.
Yeah, I think the whole thing, and I don't want to blame the players. I blame the coaches in this. I have a feeling that UF went into the game without taking it either too seriously or seriously enough. I think it seems as if Coach Mullen moves his attention to the next big game. Like before we played Bama was our number one focus. Now that is a tough team, where maybe he was looking on to LSU or Georgia. But whereas on the other side of the field, Stoops.
No, I hope not. Kentucky's a good enough team. If you're not going to play your best, they'll beat you.
It doesn't. Well, it didn't look like they went up there with that mindset. Yeah. Whereas Stoops looks at this game the same way Florida used to look at UGA, Georgia in the 80s. We were there. Georgia was our Super Bowl. We weren't winning anything. So the whole thing, the cheer, you know, get up and go Gators, beat Georgia, was the end of that cheer. Didn't matter who we were playing. All we wanted to do was beat Georgia. Now with the record that Florida has against Kentucky, we are their Super Bowl. And you got to give Stoops credit. His defense in that game was pretty amazing. And not just the way they played, but the alignments. It confused the hell out of Emory. And Anthony Richardson, when he got in, didn't know what was going on. And that I give that credit to Mark Stoops. He is a defensive guy, and his defense was on that game.
Yeah, they really had an emphasis on stopping Emory running the ball. That was definitely part of it. They really played that well. Look, and I'll even tell you, I'll speak to your point. There was a Kentucky fan, I think, who did jump into the comment section on the YouTube video yesterday. And he admitted, he even said it, and I know we've said it all week. He said, that was our Super Bowl. I mean, that is exactly how they view that game, as you said. And taking down one of the big dogs. For whatever reason, we can't get them to feel that way about Georgia. I don't know why. Maybe they think they just have more of a chance against Florida. But they never help us out when we need it, it seems to be the case. But yeah, that's exactly the way they look at it. And yeah, I think their players look at it the same way too. They have, for whatever reason, they have some confidence when they play Florida.
Well, what did they? We've beaten them 35 out of 35 years. We've beaten them. They've beaten us three times, so that's probably why they've beaten Georgia a lot more than they've beaten us.
Yeah.
So, and that's got to be the reason. But the thing is, that needs to somehow be told to Dan Mullen. Hey, Dan, these guys hate us. We need to go in there, and this is not the same team that you saw on the film against Chattanooga or Missouri. This is going to be that times two. So don't go in there assuming, oh, we got this, which is, from my opinion, and from my observation, we were not as into that game as even we were against Tennessee. It's as if we were going half speed. And you can't do that on the road in the SEC unless you're playing Vanderbilt. And that's what got me so frustrated. I was talking to my wife during the game, and I said, we're not going to win. Unless there's something dramatic in this game, we're just going to screw up enough to lose. And that's exactly what happened. They didn't do enough to win. We did enough to lose, which is denigrating Kentucky. And I apologize to any Kentucky fan who might be listening in. But it's how I feel, because it's not like they were moving the ball. It's not like they were doing anything. Yeah. It was just our constant mistakes. And that guy who commented about the officials was 100% right. There was – I don't care. 15 penalties. Some of those false starts were pretty on the line, and I've seen that being overlooked. Hell, they were overlooked in this game in the early part.
Yeah.
But there were some non-calls against Florida, like the targeting. I mean, those kind of missed calls take away scores. And as you in this game, one score was the difference.
Oh.
Anyway.
Yep.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, man. All right. One more. Get Dimitri in here if he's still out, if he's still there. Maybe the last one. Let's see it connecting. Dimitri, you in here, man? Trying to get you in here. Hey, man, good morning. Good morning, man.
I want to first off say, like, man, can we please have, like, Ahmad Black come be our defensive back coach? I mean, partially just for tackling or something like that, because how do you let the smallest guy on the field? I mean, he looked like Kadarius Toney out there, man. We diving at his ankles. I mean, our leader, supposed to be leader in the secondary, comes up and dive at a guy that's like 145 pounds. Diving at his ankles. Our secondary tackling is one of the biggest issues that we have. Not only that, our play calling on defense, if these guys are getting 6-7 yards to pop up the middle, like, why are we not pressuring the middle on defense? Why are we not making defensive adjustments? Because it just looked like, and I know we have some 5-5s on our line, transfers and this, that, and the third. Their O-line was dominating our defensive line, man, throughout the game, man. I don't know what anybody else saw, but that was the main key to me. Like, every first down, they're getting 6-7 yards a pop. And I'm sitting here like, are we going to make any adjustments? Are we going to put some linebackers to stop the middle? And we're making that adjustment. Not only that, what I listen to things, Dave, man. And now when you grow up playing football in Florida, the 2-minute drill is like the best part of practice that you can have. And for Mullen to just run the clock out like,
all right, I think lost connection there, but I think we got most of it. Yeah, I've already spoke there on the first half, late first half, the 2-minute drill. Yeah, you gotta go score there. You got to be more aggressive in that opportunity. At least go play for a field goal. I mean, if you were going to be that conservative, okay, at least play for a field goal. Go get 30 more yards and go pitch yourself in field goal range late in the first half there. And especially, like I said, you know, we can speak all the questions and limitations we have about Emery, but at that point I thought he was playing good enough to go and at least go try and be aggressive for a score late in the first quarter or late in the first half. I thought he was at least playing well enough for that. I wouldn't have been conservative in that regard. You talk about the defense there, and yeah, I mean, I've talked about the inconsistency up front all season. I think we have seen it, and look, it's hard to pin this one on the defense. I think we can nitpick and say you'd like to see this defensive line be more consistent, more aggressive, and control the game. But for the style of offense Kentucky is, I thought they did about as good as you could ask for. You give up 13 points as a defense. Now, I get it. The first score is going to – I mean, the first score ticked me off. It should tick everybody off. You knew that was the playmaker. You knew that was the guy. You could not just lose sight of him. But look, he's a good player. He's going to make plays. It's easy to sit here and say you should have stopped him. In a way, after that play, he didn't do anything the rest of the game. So, I think you somewhat did your job. And would you like to see him not score there? Of course. But as I said, 13 points with this defense and what we've seen the last couple of years, that's I say, if you're happy, if you're happy or sad, well, you got to be happy about the defense and their performance there. I thought not where I look for the reason Florida lost. And I mean, look, of course you could put blame everywhere and you can pinpoint things and that play and giving up that big screen and that big play. That's one of them. It is. But in the big picture, big scheme of things about this game, that's way, 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 way down the list before I get even to complaining about that. But you can take things away from games. Now, I still say, you know, this defensive line, yeah, I'd like to see some more consistency up front on that side of the ball as well. All right, two more in here, and I will go. This is it. I'll cut it off right here. Let me bring C2 in here and Julio.
Hey, how's it going, Dave?
Hey, man, how you doing?
I wish I was doing better today.
Yeah.
Sure. Hey, listen, I won't keep you long, man. Listen, I got to say I was dead wrong. I can say that. I did not expect the offensive line to play that bad. And it wasn't just the false starts, man. We just were not physical Saturday at all. But I'm not sure if this has been mentioned. But I think from what I understood, from what I've heard, that Elam could have played if we really needed him Saturday night. Now, I know I thought the corners played pretty well overall. I don't think they played poorly. I wouldn't say that. Other than that big screen pass to, you know, Wandell Robinson, who looks like a UF caliber athlete to me. But I think you go back to the LSU game. We could have played Pitts in that game, and Pitts didn't play. He could have played. I think Mullen even admitted later that we could have played him if we really felt like we needed him. My point to that is, I think when you don't play your best player, you're sending a message to your football team that this game don't really matter. This game doesn't really, you know, we're not taking this team very seriously. You know, we're just going to sit this guy out until we can play somebody good. And that just puts a mentality in your team, in my opinion. You put that mentality in that belief in your team that we're just going to run right through these guys. We don't need Elam. You know, we're good. We're good right where we're at. And I think the team looked like a team that thought they were just going to come out there and roll them over. And just, I don't know, what's your thoughts on that? I think that's twice now Mullen's done that.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I want that mindset. I do want the mindset that you can go out there and go beat the other team. That should be the mindset. But, you know, I guess maybe the seriousness of it, I guess kind of maybe where you're going with that. Now, Elam not playing didn't make a difference in the game, but I know what you're talking. You're talking mindset and the approach with that. Maybe to even extend that, if you want to talk about what kind of message are you sending your team, even what kind of message are you sending your team right before the half as well, in that last drive. So if you want to combine those two thoughts, and maybe that's, you know, plays into the thought system and the trust of the team there. I wouldn't argue against you if you think that makes a difference. I don't know about the Elam thing. I know he gave it a run. He warmed up, and then they called it off that he wasn't going to play. I don't know. We'll see. I know it started coming out Friday that he probably wasn't going to play. I don't really know any more than that as far as the Elam goes and if he could have played or not. I know you and I have talked about some stuff behind the scenes, so I know you got some good stuff out there and how you can gather info. So I mean, I wouldn't put it past Mullen there and just saying don't need him. And really, they didn't. But I know you're talking more about the mindset.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll tell you, I'll go back. I don't know if this is going way back. I don't know if anybody remembers a radio show in St. Augustine, ESPN in St. Augustine, called The Gator Connection. It was on for a long while. And Fred Weary was a co-host. My friend Keith Kazarowski was the host, and Fred Weary was his, his co-host. And Fred used to talk about how, as a defensive player, you had the mindset you were going to kill this team because you knew Spurrier was going to go for the kill early. You knew that Spurrier was going to try to put this team away before the half, you know. And he said it instilled a mindset in those players. You know, we're going to come out, we're going to beat this team. And this, you know, this defense, all we got to do is just play even decent on defense, and we're going to kill this team, you know?
Yeah.
And it was just a mindset. It was a swagger. It was just, and you don't see that. I kept thinking when we were right before you, as you mentioned before the half, I kept thinking, man, if this was Meyer, he would go for the throw right now, you know? And because, you notice when we got that, when Kentucky got that, forgive me, I forgot the sequence of the things, but they got in a turnover on us, I believe, right? I think we turned the ball over a couple times. But anyway, when we turned the ball over, what did Kentucky do? They went right down the field and attacked us. Yep. Now, thank God we have a 5-star corner, and Marshall did a fantastic job, in my opinion. And, you know, somebody said he put Wandell Robinson in Alcatraz, and I agree with that. He did. After that one play, that didn't happen.
Yep.
So there were some bright spots to this team. I do get concerned about the mentality of the team, the psyche of this team, because now they really, truthfully, let's be real honest, they got nothing to play for now. They really don't.
Yep.
And now it's all about pride. And if it were me, I would focus, you know, week to week, but I would really focus on that Georgia game and try to ruin their season at that point. Because, listen, I'm a Gator through and through, bro, but it's roll tide for me the rest of this way, because I do not want Georgia winning a national championship, and I don't care who beats them. I don't care, you know, we just can't have that happen. And another thing I'll point out, and I'll go, what's frustrating about all this, we got Miami down. We got FSU down, and we're not capitalizing on that at all.
Yep,
and not
that's
in the recruiting trail.
Yeah, there you go. And I'll speak. That's kind of where I was going a little bit yesterday with the kind of Kentucky comparison. All right, you're 2-2 versus Kentucky. Kentucky is improving, no doubt about it. They're an improving team, but you should have been at the point now with the success you had in 2018 and 2019 to build something when the FSU and Miami's down. You know, you had your chance to really build a solid recruiting base to. to kind of further the talent gap to where if you do have an off night, to where you're playing pretty bad on a Saturday night in Lexington, that you can still some way come out and win that game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm concerned. I really am. And I'll tell you what, I know this sounds crazy. I've watched South Carolina. They play inspired. I think you said that once before. They play inspired football. They're not that talented, but they're going to come after us when we play them. And they're not going to back down from us. And I mentioned that because I think I could see three more losses this season. I really could. I think LSU is going to be a real challenge, obviously. And Georgia is going to make or break our season, in my opinion. It's going to make or break whether this team – we're going to see if this team is going to fold or they're going to fight. And I think Jacksonville is going to tell the tale.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think you want to see that killer instinct. You want to see that mentality from here on out. And, you know, that goes for the, you know, going in practice. You want to go see them. That goes for the coaching staff. That goes for the players, I think, you know. And I agree. I think it does start up top. And I know we can sit here and talk, and sometimes we can give Dan Mullen credit for tinkering and trying to work on things in a game or something like that. But, okay, well, do that when you're up 30-0 in the midway to the second quarter. You know, right. you don't have to tinker from the get go. You know, go out there and go put your points up, and then start putting your young guys.
But that goes back to the respect of the opponent. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but that goes back to the opponent. I mean, he plays down to his opponents, and he's done that since Mississippi. He did that at Mississippi State. Of course, you know, he was usually the one that was down as far as talent wise. You know,
well, yeah. Well, I went and thought about that too. I mean, what was it, 2016 for them? They opened the season up with a loss to South Alabama, or something like that. You know, he's played down to the competition. I mean, he was at Mississippi State too. Now, don't get me wrong, he played up to it as well, and you know, never beat Alabama, but gave him a run for their money a couple of times. And LSU and Auburn, Texas A&M, teams that recruit better than them, but there were those inexcusable losses at Mississippi State too, and those games like you just opening up the season with South Alabama and losing that game. You know, that's kind of reminiscent of what we've seen a couple of times here.
Well, remember in Meyer's book, when Meyer said, you know, he talked about Dan in his book. I think I can't direct quote it, but he said something like, you know, it was a fourth down in the 2006 SEC championship game, and Dan screaming in his ear, go for it, effing go for it. You know, I don't know if you remember that or not, but yeah, he said that, you know, Dan pushed him to go for it, and that's when we did that fake, I think. With Jamel Cornelius, but where's that Dan Mullen? Where's that Dan Mullen? You know, where is that guy?
The first drive of the game may have been the indication there. I mean,
yeah.
I don't Mullen. I'd say 90-95% goes for it right there in fourth down.
Yeah, so. You know what? It's always go Gators, bro. And we're going to get this ship right. You know, we're going to get the ship right eventually. And I don't think it's going to be under Dan Mullen, unfortunately. So.
All right. We'll see where that goes. All right. Thanks, man.
Thanks, man.
All right, Julio. I think if you're still in here, man, you'll be the last one. This thing has went on for an hour and 40 minutes now. So, all right. There you are.
What's up, boss?
Hey, man.
My question is, did you see the play with Tyron Hopper? Filled the hole. He came up high, kind of got ran over. But isn't that the linebacker play we need right there? Like on that exact play, isn't that the linebacker play we need? I feel like the linebackers we have now, as soon as the ball say height, they backing up.
Yeah, it goes into, you know, what are the coaches asking them to do, but you would love to see, moving forward, filling the gap there, and that's what you were going to need versus Kentucky. I mean, their offensive line is going to try and move defensive linemen out of the way and ask their running backs to make a play. For the most part in the defense, I mean, I thought they did an okay job. Yeah, but Kentucky had to run yards. They were always going to have to run yards. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and ask a defense for a Kentucky team that's got a really good offensive line and some good running backs to go out there and make them run for 30 yards. This to me wasn't likely, especially with this defense. I mean, I didn't expect that anyway. I, like I said, I want some more consistency up front. I thought the linebackers played okay. I expected Diabate to go in there and have a lot of tackles. He did. He showed some nice pursuit at times as well. That's kind of what he brings to the table. But yeah, Hopper's some guy, and I pointed it out in the preview and a couple times last week doing these things. A guy I wanted to see more of. I think he's probably the best tackler at the linebacker position. Jeremiah Moon played well as well, again, at linebacker. You know, I think Florida got pretty lucky there that they identified that preseason. Ventrell Miller goes down, and Jeremiah Moon comes in and does some nice things as well. So, you know, we'll see. Kentucky, you know, they did a good job against Kentucky. I don't think Kentucky played all too well, and I think a lot of that was due to Florida and what they were doing as well. It's just, you know, I still want to see some more consistency. I thought Gervin Dexter played another good game, but it wasn't what he did versus Alabama and Tennessee the week before to me. I thought he had a good game. But, you know, there's still a lack of dominance that I thought we'd see on a more consistent basis from that defensive tackle group. So, you know, for defense, get Elam back, have Marshall continue to show some progress that we saw Saturday night versus Kentucky, and some more consistency up there in that front seven. Linebackers a little more aggressive, as you say. Like, I would like to see them play a little more aggressive, and I'd like to see that defensive line with some more consistency. So I think that's where I'm at on the defense, you know, after a performance that was worthy of a win Saturday night. All right, guys, thank you so much. This completely went a whole lot longer than I thought it would, but going to have that conversation with you guys. Thank you so much for hopping in here for another Twitter Spaces here. I know we all trying to cope together with this one. We'll see what we get moving forward. I'll do this again Friday morning as well, every Monday, every Friday. We'll see what happens in the bye week, but we can worry about that in a couple weeks. But got to go. Sure to check out Gators Breakdown tonight, me and Will Miles. 9 o'clock, a little bit later start tonight. We'll talk to Dan Mullen today. I'll try and get in and ask a couple questions that I know you guys are wanting to know some answers for. So we'll get in there and get that done. So be on the lookout for Dan Mullen's press conference today, and we'll review it all tonight on Gators Breakdown with me and Will Miles starting at 9 o'clock. So that'll do it for this edition of Twitter Spaces, and I'll check you guys out on the next one.